And this is Building Bridges with Mimi Rosenberg and Ken Nash.
Bankruptcy judge upholds junta's power over island nation, further legitimizing Puerto Rico's colonial status.
Equals death. I'ma cry freedom to my very last breath. Pull up the shades and let the sun shine. Brother, we ain't free while we forced to die. We sent the early grace for a lie, but I spit fake out, not American pie. We Borinque still ain't free to this day. You brought your Trojan gifts and walked away. La Isla de Vieques is still in pain. Boricuas waving the U.S. flag are insane. Yeah, I said it, go ahead and discredit my words with your Fox News media edits. I'm a stage spitting poetic justice. Uncle Sam got his hand out to shake, don't trust it. Colonialism, a country in prison. Commonwealth is an open prison.
Libertad, dame la libertad o dame la muerte.
Libertad. And now to discuss the latest assault on Puerto Rico and what it means for the island's residents, as a federal bankruptcy judge has upheld a junta's power over the island nation and further codified its colonial status, Ken Nash and I speak with Professor Rafael Bernabe, researcher and professor at the University of Puerto Rico. He's the co-author with Cesar Ayala of Puerto Rico in the American Century, a history since 1898, and is a tireless social justice advocate with the Working People's Party in Puerto Rico. From Puerto Rico, we welcome Professor Bernabe.
Thank you for having me.
So, how do you read the significance of the federal bankruptcy court upholding the power of the junta and essentially further codifying the stripping of Governor Ricardo Rassolo and really the legislature of Puerto Rico of any self-determination in its own policies and practices? What do you think this means?
Yeah, well, I think that maybe we should give a little bit of background to the listeners so that they understand what this decision is about. Puerto Rico, as you mentioned, is a colony of the United States. Many of the policies that affect Puerto Rico are taken by the U.S. Congress or departments of the federal government or the President of the United States. And so that situation existed before the creation of the Oversight Board. Beginning in 2016, Congress created, or in 2016, Congress approved the legislation, which is known in Puerto Rico as PROMESA. The full name is Puerto Rico Oversight Management and Stability Act. And this legislation created a junta, a board, an oversight board, or a control board, which is empowered to oversee the financial functioning of the government of Puerto Rico. What that means is that the government of Puerto Rico had to approve a multi-year fiscal plan. It's a five-year plan. And then every budget, every year, has to fit within that fiscal plan. It's a fiscal plan which is very restrictive. It implies very sharp reduction in government spending, public services, the privatization of many services, privatizations of schools, and so on. But the structure up to the recent decision was that the government of Puerto Rico writes the budget of Puerto Rico, as it normally does, and negotiates with the junta, with the board. If the junta disagrees with some aspect of the budget, they negotiate and they come to some sort of agreement. Recently, the junta was so, let us say, aggressive in terms of the cuts and the measures that it wanted to impose on the government of Puerto Rico that even the government of Puerto Rico, which is not in any way a radical government or even a progressive government, is a very conservative government, was not able to, or not willing to agree to some of the measures that the junta or the board wanted to impose. So they weren't able to come to an agreement. And the board went to court, or the junta or the board claimed to have the right, to have the power, to, if there was no agreement, to impose its version of the budget. While the government of Puerto Rico argued that the junta does not have the power to impose a budget, that the government of Puerto Rico still retains the power to approve the budget of the government of Puerto Rico, and that the junta has to negotiate with the government of Puerto Rico. Well, they went to court, and as you mentioned, the court decided that, yes, the junta has the right to impose its own version of the budget. So this kind of tightens the screws on the government of Puerto Rico. It was already a colonial situation. It was an accentuated colonial situation with the creation of the board in 2016, and now the powers of the board over the government of Puerto Rico have been increased because of this decision. And needless to say, the policies that the board wants to impose on Puerto Rico and is imposing on Puerto Rico are terrible, terrible policies. They are basically based on two premises. One premise is that the problem, the fiscal problem of Puerto Rico and the debt problem of Puerto Rico is due to the fact that the allegedly the government of Puerto Rico is too big, therefore you have to privatize, therefore you have to reduce public spending and so on. And the other premise of the policies of the junta is that the problem with the economy of Puerto Rico, the reason why it doesn't grow, is because the workers of Puerto Rico have too many rights, and therefore you have to eliminate and to cut all sorts of labor protections in Puerto Rico. So they are imposing these terrible austerity policies on the island, and they are taking away labor rights, which, needless to say, is impoverishing people in Puerto Rico and is not going to help in any way to solve the present economic crisis.
Well, I was going to ask a question about the recovery from the hurricane and also the question of whether FEMA is at all involved in helping you in these days, but I'd like you to first talk about some of these cutbacks that you were talking about in the anti-labor policies.
I can give you several examples. Where I work, which is the University of Puerto Rico, is a very good example. The government is planning and is already implementing to cut the budget of the government of the University of Puerto Rico by half. It's not reducing it by, 10% or 20%, by half. And at the same time, they are increasing the tuition fees that students have to pay. They are not only increasing them, slightly, they are doubling them. They are duplicating them. Students will have to pay the double amount of money that they used to pay in order to study at the university. And at the same time, they are attacking and reducing many gains of working people in the university, sick leave and pensions and so on and so forth. So they are attacking the workers of the university, they are attacking the students in the university, and they are slashing the budget of the university. Another terrible example, another very dramatic example, is the policy being followed in the public school system. There they are following a policy of closing schools. They have closed about 250 schools since last May. We are now beginning the new school semester in, this week, and there are 250 schools less than there were last May, which has created a terrible situation in which the schools that are supposed to receive the students whose schools have closed are not really ready to receive all of these students or the teachers. It's a very chaotic situation. In fact, teachers are going to have a one-day strike Wednesday, tomorrow, in order to protest, react against this terrible situation. Other policies that are being followed is the privatization of services. They are seeking the privatization of the electrical system, which has many problems, but we don't think that privatization is going to solve any of them. They are going in that direction. The board, not so much the government of Puerto Rico, the board is insisting on eliminating many labor protections in Puerto Rico. The biggest measure that they want to approve, the most important one, is they want to revoke, they want to eliminate legislation which in Puerto Rico is known as Law 180, which is a legislation that protects, somewhat protects workers against firings. in Puerto Rico, in order to fire a worker, you have to have one of several reasons indicated in this legislation, which means that workers evidently can be fired in Puerto Rico, but you have to follow certain procedures. If you don't follow them, then the employer may be, you know, may be fined or maybe may have to pay compensation to the worker affected by this decision.
And that's something that we can use here in the mainland also, which we
What they want to establish is what you call in the United States, I think it's called employment at will, which is that they can fire you anytime without any hesitation or compensation and so on. And using, in fact, the argument that this is what exists in many states of the United States, they want to revoke this labor protection legislation in Puerto Rico. This is one of the things that the junta wants to do. This is one of the things that people are very much attached to, and they think it's a very important labor protection. And the government of Puerto Rico, as I said, reactionary and conservative as it is, has hesitated in approving this or going along with the junta on this request. This has been one of the issues of some sort of conflict between the junta and the government, which exists. And so right now, as I said, we are facing privatization policies, we are facing cutbacks in services. Another measure which has a terrible effect is the fact that they are reducing pensions of government workers. You know, depending on the size of the pension, it's a 10%, 20%, 30% reduction. But pensions in Puerto Rico are already very low, so that if you reduce pensions, then you basically are sending a lot of people under the poverty level because they are already on the edge of that. And you know, 10% or 20% reduction in their pensions would push them over the edge into, you know, a situation of need. So whether it's people who are already in retirement, whether it's students in universities, students in the public school system, workers in the government or workers in the private sectors, everybody is being somehow affected by these terrible austerity policies, which, as I said, they are not only bad in terms of impoverishing people, but they are even worse because they are impoverishing people to no purpose. You said that we are sacrificing in order to bring the country out of its present economic crisis. Well, maybe, but not even that. We are sacrificing in order to perpetuate the present economic depression.
And obviously the exacerbation of the condition of the people of Puerto Rico by virtue of the fact that the Hurricane Maria, but of course that the resources have never been there to rebuild the island. But at this time, is there any more cohesive strategy, Professor, or are people still kind of in their silos working around their particular issue, whether it's in education, whether it's in the university context, in the power sector grid, you know, et cetera, being privatized? Or has there come about more of a collectivization that also results in really an examination of the status of Puerto Rico politically, which allows for this complete boot on the neck by the U.S. government and its PROMESA Act legislation?
Yeah, as several things about that. First of all, as you point out, the situation of Puerto Rico was already very bad, very dire, very complicated before Hurricane Maria. Hurricane Maria accentuated many of the problems that already existed. Just to give you a raw figure, the damage caused by Maria has been estimated at around $90 billion. Puerto Rico's gross domestic product, you know, is about $100 billion. So it's a very significant amount, $90 billion. It's more than the debt of Puerto Rico. This is one of the reasons why there is a movement, and I'm part of that movement, that argues that the debt of the government of Puerto Rico, which was already unsustainable before Hurricane Maria, which you cannot pay without imposing on the Puerto Rican people terrible sacrifices for many years, unacceptable sacrifices, and condemning the economy to further, as I said, depression for many years, that this debt, which was already unsustainable before Maria, now it's quite simply unpayable. It has to be canceled. There's no way that an impoverished country that has suffered a disaster such as Maria can be asked to pay a $73 billion debt. It's just an immoral act. This debt has to be canceled. And there are many good legal arguments for that. You know, the doctrine of change of circumstance, when the circumstances of a debtor change by situations that are under his or her control, they have a good reason to, they have a good argument to have part of that debt or that whole debt canceled. In the same fashion, there's the doctrine of state of necessity. When a government, in order to pay a debt, would have to stop carrying out the tasks that it has to, you know, the duties that it has to protect people and the health of people and security of people, then it has the good argument to cancel that debt. But anyway, as you point out, there are many struggles in Puerto Rico going on. There's the labor movement. There are initiatives to revive Puerto Rican agriculture. There are movements to defend the environment, which is another aspect of the policies of the government, and they're trying to sell many natural resources of Puerto Rico as part of or their conception of how to bring out Puerto Rico out of the present crisis. So there's the environmental movement, there's the student movement, there's a very lively women's movement at this moment in Puerto Rico, and the labor movement, and so on. And I think that we're all struggling in the same direction. I would say that we still have to go some further steps in order to organize, as you point out, a more coordinated, a more collective resistance to the junta. Unfortunately, right now, still, I would say, you know, we are a little bit too fragmented, more fragmented than we should be. You know, the unions are doing some work, the environmentalists are doing some work, the women's movement is doing some work. It's all good work, but it has to be coordinated in a better fashion so we can have a unified, coherent response to what the junta and the government want to impose on Puerto Rico.
And at this point also, I'm wondering as to whether there are specific actions that people on the mainland should be backing up our sisters and brothers. For example, should we continue to plow ahead with the cancellation of the Jones Act, which was temporarily suspended? Are there other kinds of things that we can be doing to support the activities of our sisters and brothers on the island?
Yeah, well, I think that there are many institutions or persons that need to receive the message about Puerto Rico. There's Congress. We need to demand that Congress recognize its responsibility for the situation in Puerto Rico. As you said, Congress has maintained Puerto Rico in a colonial status for more than a century now. Congress has maintained Puerto Rico in a situation in which it cannot really develop its economy. There are, you know, I could list many measures taken by Congress that have hindered Puerto Rico's economic development. And Congress has to recognize that responsibility, and it should assign a significant amount of money to reconstruct Puerto Rico's economy. This is not different from many what poor people and working people need in the United States. Sometimes people ask me, you know, why should Congress assign, you know, $5 billion to reconstruct Puerto Rico when it doesn't do that in the United States or in many regions of the United States? And my answer to that is that it should do that in the United States as well, because poor people and working people in the United States need major federal programs, you know, to create jobs, to fix infrastructure, to provide housing, and so on. So we need to demand that Congress assign considerable amount of funds for Puerto Rico's reconstruction. And we need to pressure the creditors of Puerto Rico, the bondholders, the people who hold the debt of Puerto Rico, so that they know that what they are doing is a terrible thing. What they are trying to impose on Puerto Rico is something that must be rejected. Many of these bondholders have, you know, offices in Wall Street and in New York and in other places. And we also have to put pressure on Judge Laura Taylor Swain, which is the federal judge in New York, who is in charge of the negotiations regarding Puerto Rico's debt. And we have to let this judge know, you know, and we can have mobilizations, we can pickets, we can have, you know, we can write letters to her or whatever. We have to let this judge know that the debt of Puerto Rico cannot be paid, that it should not be paid, that it would be criminal to continue trying to collect a payment for this debt on the people who are already impoverished and who have gone through this terrible experience of Hurricane Maria. So, you know, Congress, the federal courts, and the creditors, those three entities need to hear from us in Puerto Rico and from all our friends in the United States so that they get a message that Puerto Rico needs funds to reconstruct our economy, Puerto Rico needs the debt canceled, and Puerto Rico needs a process of decolonization, needless to say. We have to solve the what we call in Puerto Rico the status question, the colonial question. Puerto Rico is a colony. Just about everybody in Puerto Rico recognizes that. Anybody who looks at the Puerto Rican situation objectively recognizes that Puerto Rico is a colony. And colony, you know, colonialism is like slavery. It's something that, you know, has to disappear. Once you recognize it exists, then the next step you have to take is to abolish it. And so we need a decolonization process. So, you know, to summarize, we have to demand that they cancel the debt. We have to demand funds from Congress as a sort of compensation for the disasters caused by colonialism so that we can reconstruct our economy. And we need a decolonization process, a process for self-determination for Puerto Rico.
Well, it sounds like some of us in New York have to take a trip down to the federal bankruptcy court to assist our sisters and brothers from Puerto Rico, among the other things that Professor Rafael Bernabe has suggested. Thank you for the work that you do, for being with us, and we have been speaking with Professor Rafael Bernabe, professor and researcher at the University of Puerto Rico and an activist with the Working People's Party in Puerto Rico. And if you haven't read the book, you got to pick it up. You got to pick it up. And that is Puerto Rico in the American Century, a history since 1898 by Professor Rafael Bernabe with Cesar Ayala. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you for having me.
And acclaimed poet Martin Espada.
Such an honor to be here with all of you, because all of you freed Oscar Lopez Rivera. Some of you may have heard that Coca-Cola pulled its sponsorship of the Puerto Rican Day Parade, because Coca-Cola is a paragon of virtue in Latin America. read up sometime on the killing of union organizers at Coke bottling plants in Colombia. And speaking of the tropics, I am from the tropical paradise of Brooklyn, New York. This poem is based on my first visit to Puerto Rico at the age of 11, where I saw, for the first time, the inner workings of the colonized mind, as expressed in my family's choice of beverage. This is called Coca-Cola and Coco Frio. On his first visit to Puerto Rico, island of family folklore, the fat boy wandered from table to table with his mouth open. At every table, some great aunt would steer him with cool, spotted hands to a glass of Coca-Cola. One even sang to him, in all the English he could remember, a Coca-Cola jingle from the 40s. He drank obediently, though he was bored with this potion, familiar from soda fountains in Brooklyn. Then, at a roadside stand off the beach, the fat boy opened his mouth to Coco Frio, a coconut chilled and scalped by a machete so that a straw could inhale the clear milk. The boy tilted the green shell overhead and drew coconut milk down his chin. Suddenly, Puerto Rico was not Coca-Cola or Brooklyn, and neither was he. For years afterward, the boy marveled at an island where the people drank Coca-Cola and sang jingles from World War II in a language they did not speak, while so many coconuts in the trees sagged heavy with milk, swollen and unsuckled. Muchas gracias. Y viva Puerto Rico libre!
This has been Building Bridges, your community and labor report with Mimi Rosenberg
and Ken Nash. And log on to our website at www.buildingbridgesradio.org.